I'm Jonathan Bullard, and I'm in conversation with Ben O'Connor. Ben, welcome to In Conversation With.
Thank you very much, John. I appreciate you having me.
It's great to have you on, and timely as well. And we will come on to this later on, but we have had this arranged for a while. But as we record this, it's a couple of days after your release from the Sheffield Steelers.
Yeah. Obviously, with you being the client of mine, we talked about this about a month and a half ago now. And obviously, with the timing of everything, and I've seen a couple of tweets people have put at you. No, honestly, it is. You know, I said I'd do this with you a couple of months back, and it just so happens to be that the timing of this is pretty relevant.
Obviously, I'm going to start with what has just happened. So you've been released by the Sheffield Steelers. They put out a press statement. You countered that press statement. And I know you're very conscious that you don't want to get into a war of words or anything like that. And I totally respect that. The Sheffield Steelers said that you couldn't reach terms on agreement. You said that there was an agreement. Just give your side of the story, and then we're going to leave it at that.
Yeah, again, like I don't want to, like you said, I don't want to get into a slagging match. I've loved my time in Sheffield. It's my boyhood team, a team my dad played for, a team I've always dreamed to play for. And, you know, it's fulfilled all those expectations. You know, I've won here. I've won all of the trophies that we could win. And the only one that we didn't win was the Challenge Cup. And to go out on the last game like that was pretty cool. And it was special. But I just want people to know the truth, because obviously, you know, for me to come out and say what I have, it doesn't look good on me. So why would I lie, kind of thing? And basically, it's true. They gave me a deadline, which was on a Friday in March. I came back on the Monday after taking that pay cut and said I'd accept it. Mr. Fox said it was too late, which I said it was understandable. You know, he said he'd get back to me and he never did. I was still waiting when he thought things were over. So yeah, basically, I accepted the pay cut, and he said the 2 days after the deadline was too late, which I understand that. But when you're taking a big pay cut, it's you've got to discuss it with family and make sure things are viable, because loyalty doesn't pay the bills. And I didn't want to go anywhere else. That's why I accepted the pay cut. And in my eyes, 2 days later than anticipated in March, if he wanted me to play for Sheffield, then I believe that he could have had me there. But again, I don't want to get into a slagging match. Aaron's got a view of where he wants to take the team, and good luck to him. You know, he's a young coach. He's got to be bold. He's got to make bold decisions. He's been coaching for 2 years. He's come into Sheffield being successful, and he's paid to make those decisions. And I wish Sheffield and best of luck. And I thank everyone for my time. But for myself personally, I just wanted everyone to know that some of the rumors that have been going around that I was demanding so-and-so, which is definitely not true. And from their point of view, they said about negotiations, well, negotiations go both ways, and that's not how it went. But again, I just want to thank everyone in Sheffield, down to security guards, down to fans, down to volunteers, down to, you know, supporters club, that have made my time in Sheffield and my family's time so enjoyable. Being a lot of people that I remember from being a kid being fantastic. But now it's time to move on. We all knew this day was going to come sooner rather than later, anticipated. But I've played for other teams before and come into the arena and scored goals, or at Sheffield in one game. So I'm looking forward to a clean slate, a new team, and someone that wants me. Because at the end of the day, that's what every player wants. You want to be somewhere that you wanted.
Is it a bit of a wrench, though, leaving, like you say, your boyhood club, the club you supported as a boy? It must be a bit gut-wrenching at the time, but obviously you appreciate that the coach wants to take it in a different direction, and he must be respected for that.
Yeah, of course. I, you know, it's clear that Sheffield is a team that's always going to be special to me. But when I played for Basingstoke or Coventry or Edinburgh, you know, it didn't stop me coming in and wanting to win. I'm a professional sportsman that wants to win. So, you know, whichever team that may be, I want to do my best and win games. And especially when my father works for the team, I get bragging rights when you come in and win. Or I've been with Sheffield for 6 years. We've been successful. We've won a lot of trophies. And Aaron's got a direction that he wants to take the team, and he's got to live by that. And if it's successful, he looks great. If he's not, then so be it. But for myself, I can't be somewhere that I'm not wanted. So I'm excited to go somewhere else. Like I said, clean slate and help another team and be successful with another team, because that's, at the end of the day, what every hockey player wants. I want to win. I want to win trophies. And I'll do whatever it takes to do that.
We'll talk about the future later in the interview, but looking at your time in Sheffield, incredibly successful for you, two league championships, a playoff championship, and like you said, the recent Challenge Cup victory as well. Sheffield have always been a club that's at the forefront of British hockey, winning trophies. To be part of that, a team you supported, must have been incredibly special.
Yeah, it is. And first year back, we had highs and lows, and throughout my 6 years, we've had highs and lows. You know, I'm sure that you can relate, Jono, that in Nottingham and in Cardiff now, and the big clubs in the league, that when you're losing games, it's a cauldron. Fans demand the best and demand you to win, and it's a high pressure environment to be in, and not everyone can handle that. You've seen that with coaches and players throughout the league at those high pressure clubs, that they do well at other teams, and then when they come in and you've got to win every night and every mistake gets scrutinized, or it's difficult. And, you know, that's what I enjoy. I enjoy that pressure. I enjoy being expected to win every night. And again, it's fun. And when you're playing in those big teams and those big games, the Nottingham Sheffield games, the Nottingham Cardiffs, you know, you're that Final Four or wherever it may be, it's fun. And that's the situation as a player, that any player, that's the situation you want to be in.
What were the special moments for you in Sheffield? I mentioned the four trophy wins there, but what are the moments that actually stick out for you?
I think the first year, coming back with Jared Adams, Matthew Roy, Michael Fournier, Colton Fretta, Cohen Eddy, Butler Baldwin, Dustin Cohn, Frank Doyle, coming back from Kazakhstan after 4 years and playing in Sheffield and just, you know, living that dream and being on such a veteran team. It was so much fun. It was kind of like, we can look back now 6 years ago, and I know this might sound condescending, but it was kind of like old school. Like, we're an older group where we had a lot of fun. And yes, I do mean a lot of beers. But we knew when it came to the rink that we worked hard and everyone held everyone else accountable. The top players in the team, you know, Jono Phillips is a key example, Matthew Roy, Fretta, all these guys that love to go out and have a drink, you know, as a team environment and doing things together. You know, when it came to practice, we worked hard and we knew what we expected of one another, and it was good fun. We had that good core there for a couple of years where we knew what it took to be successful. And especially that second year when we held some of that core together, like, we weren't the best team in the league by far, but we knew how to win, like Cardiff have done for the last couple of years. Like, they knew how to win. Even on nights that they weren't great, they knew how to win. And that's why I enjoyed the first couple of years back. We were just a lot of fun. And again, under Tomo, I enjoyed that. I mean, every year is special for its own way. And even when I went to Sweden and came back and the results weren't going our way and it was a difficult year, it was fun to be back in Sheffield, and it was fun to be in that different situation, because everyone's great when you're winning, but it's not until you're in the trenches and you're losing, it's when you see the true color of people and the true character of people, and that's how you really reflect and judge people, I think. So I've loved every year for its own an individual reason, but, you know, obviously some more than others when you win trophies.
You played for four different coaches during your six seasons at the Steelers. each with their own style, each with their own ideas, each with their own way of wanting to play. Does that make it difficult, or does it make it easier in that respect, in the fact that you have a different coach to impress? And is that more of a challenge, or is it a detriment?
Yeah, it's a very, very good question, John. Especially when you get a new coach that comes in that maybe doesn't know the league, or when you're getting a coach that has his own way of thinking. You know, you look at Tom Barrasso, and his way was he knew what he had as a team, and he believed that the way that we were to play was to be the best to have any success of winning. And you look at other coaches like Jared Adams, or that liked a little bit more crash and bang, or certain coaches have their different philosophies, and you've got to buy into that. You know, with that being said, the type of player I am, coaches kind of understand that, you know, I am offensive and I am high risk, and that's just the way I am. And, you know, as a team, you're going to have those defensive defensemen, you're going to have offensive defensemen, you're going to have stay-at-home forwards, you're going to have offensive forwards. You know, you can't just have a team of all-out goal scorers or all-out defense, because that doesn't work. So I've always got along with the coach as well. Time in Sheffield, I haven't got a bad word to say about any of them. The most cool coach would be Tom Barrasso, just because of the stories he could tell about his time in the NHL. And, you know, just to listen to him was just something special. And that's not taken away from any of the other coaches. It's just, you know, as a hockey player and the places he's played and the people he's played with and the Stanley Cups, and, you know, he's very special. So that was cool to meet someone like that, and a lot of respect and time for him. Again, 6 years, four coaches. You don't get long to change things around if things aren't going well.
That elusive Challenge Cup came at the end of the 1920 season before it was abruptly cut short. That must have been special, because it's been, what, the whole Elite League era without winning the Challenge Cup for the Steelers. So yeah, to win it must have been incredible.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we lost at home to Cardiff in the Challenge Cup final, and then I think the 1 year Nottingham beat Cardiff in Sheffield, which was nice to see.
What's for me?
But, you know, and then we lose in Cardiff in the Challenge Cup final to them before. So, yeah, it was one of those where, you know, Cardiff's a great team. And, you know, Lord has done such a great job in getting them to play the way he wants to play. And, again, retaining that core for so long. And, you know, Martin and Haddad and, you know, Lewis, I think, you know, he's done a fantastic job. And, you know, when you play against those guys, you work hard, but you've got respect for them. And same with Lord, what he's done is fantastic, because realistically, when they were in the big blue tent coming out of there, Lord was just kind of taken over. And, you know, he's done a fantastic job. And again, it's now one of the top places to play in the UK. They're another fan base, another team. Kelman demands the best and demands to win. And that's what any player wants, as well as Nottingham, as well as Sheffield, as well as Belfast. You know, those top teams, they demand the best. And that's what you want to create. More teams like that is the better, because that makes the league better. We've seen that every year since I've been back 6 years. Now that every year the league's gone from strength to strength, because there's more teams that are pushing, more teams that are challenging for that top spot. And it's good to see.
Just before we move on and to leave Sheffield, but I do want to ask you this. You mentioned it's a bit gut-wrenching to leave the club after six seasons for what they mean to you. But is it a little bit more gut-wrenching because of the situation and because the season was ended so abruptly, so you haven't really got that closure that maybe you would have done had the season been completed?
Yes and no, but like deep down I knew it was kind of coming, because normally I signed my contracts like December, January time, and I was asking the same just to get that signed, and they were withholding that and say, oh, no, we'll just wait. Yeah, we'll get it done next week. And, you know, I'm not stupid. I know it's coming. So, you know, when you're playing for your contract and you're playing, you're trying to impress, you're trying to do a bit more, or, you know, it's difficult, and that's the job we're in, and it is what it is. So in the back of my mind, like, I kind of braced myself for it's coming. You get a sixth sense of these type of things, that if you want to put it that way. Like, I knew that he'd signed Jones pretty late on in the season, so I knew that was already kind of, my way was kind of set in that aspect. But Yeah, I mean, it is sad because it's not just me leaving. It's, you know, a lot of fans and friends that I see every week and you'd like to say bye to properly. But yeah, it is sad. But, you know, I'll be back in the arena again, just not in an orange shirt. And you know, just like Luke Ferrara has and just like Matthew Roy did with Glasgow, come back and upset the party. And I'm sure, you know, I'll see everyone again in the future.
Going to move on and look at your career. And it is some career that you've had. Obviously starting your senior career at the Hull Thunder way back in the 2002-03 season. But you've played junior hockey in Canada. You've played in France. You played in Kazakhstan. You played in Sweden. You played for three other elite league clubs. It's one hell of a career you've had. And you're still only 31.
Yeah, I mean, just to go back to the Hull Thunder days. So that was by default because they were back in the BNL days. And that was when my dad was GM, and back then you needed so many Brits to dress. So the only times I got games was when they were playing up in Fife or they were playing somewhere, you know, far away where they couldn't get any local kids to play because they would have games of their own and none of the parents were willing to drive them all the way up to Fife to sit on the bench for a couple hours and all the way back. So you know, they had to have X amount of British players dressed. So I remember the countless times that I'd play a game wherever it may be in the country, and then my old man would meet the bus and I'd sit on the bus, or he'd drive me all the way up to Fife and I'd sit there, and I don't think I ever got a shift, but it was good experience and it was just good to see. It was good fun, and yeah, it was interesting.
Because what would you have been, 14, 15 years old at that time?
I was 14, yeah. It was before I went to Canada, yeah.
Obviously, that can't happen now because you have to be 16 to play seniors. But what sort of grounding that did that give you? We often hear a lot about players who sit on the bench, but do you gain some experience by sitting in that environment with older and senior players?
Well, I think there's a difference between sitting on the bench at 14 and getting experience rather than sitting on the bench at 20. And I think there's some prime examples being in the past in Sheffield. But for me at 14, I was just sitting, taking everything in. It was fantastic. And when I came back, I wanted to, my first professional, you know, team was Basingstoke. And then halfway through the year when they had the money troubles, I went up to Edinburgh. But my first couple of years, I wanted to play on a team where I knew I was going to play and where I was going to give that opportunity, because that's where you are given the chance to shine and play against the best. I mean, when I was up in Edinburgh, we had 5-6-D, and one of our D-men, Adam Steppisham, was a fighter, and he was a very good fighter. So he was in a lot of fights. So we'd literally have 5-D for the majority of the time. And so that means the mistakes I made that I was still going to play where, you know, a team like Sheffield, if one of the younger guys goes out and he makes a mistake, he's not going to go out again. You know, so what kind of confidence? Or he's not getting a shift until 5 minutes to go in the first period, where he sat there for the whole period. Or, you know, the problem is the league is so important in this country. You can't, a coach can't risk putting kids out there to make a mistake, because every goal counts. You know, you speak to coaches that are in Germany. I mean, I remember speaking to Corey at GB, and he said, yeah, during the season, once, you know, we can afford to lose a couple games here and there, because the league's, it's just about positioning for the playoffs. So he can play his young players. He can give them opportunities and chances, where over here, you can't do that because the league's so important. So it is tough. And, you know, for any young kids, I'd just say, you know, go somewhere where you're going to play, because you don't improve by sitting on the bench. It is difficult. It is tough because everyone wants to play for the biggest and the best team, but it's okay until you're sitting on the bench. It's pretty miserable by after month two or three of sitting there and not contributing.
Obviously, you've got the link to Sheffield through your dad, Mike O'Connor, who used to play for them. Was there ever a temptation to join Sheffield earlier in your career through that link, or was it never really an option?
No, again, like I wanted, I mean, I'm friends with Mopes, and obviously the stick he got in Nottingham because obviously who his dad is. And just for thing, you know, in the past, like I didn't want any association with my dad and me being in Sheffield. I wanted Sheffield to want me rather than me want Sheffield, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Perfect. You know, I wanted to come in and be an impact player rather than come in and sit on the bench and pine and want to play. You know, I wanted to come in and be that impact player straight away. You know, I wanted like the amount of years when I was at Basingstoke, Coventry, you know, people would say, oh, come play for Sheffield, but I knew I wasn't good enough yet, you know, so I wanted to be coming in and making sure I'm playing a regular shift rather than sitting on the bench.
You had a spell at Coventry, another spell at Edinburgh, and then made your way to Morzine in France before arriving in Kazakhstan for four seasons. Why Kazakhstan in particular after a season in France?
So the year after I was in France, I went and lived in Canada with my aunt and uncle. I went and trained over there. I had a trainer. And like it was my year in France, like it really made me open my eyes. Like when I'm not afraid to say it, my time in the UK before that, I was really overweight. I drank a lot. I was young. I was dumb. I was drinking a lot, partying, and didn't really take hockey too serious. And I joke with Nicky Sherlock, who is the physio in Coventry all the time at GB now, that when Tomo used to do weigh-ins in Coventry, I used to like beg her to take pounds off, you know, because I was overweight. And back then I was just young and naive and just, I didn't take it that serious until I went to France. Everything kind of changed for me there. And then after that summer, I went and lived in Canada, got a trainer, and I got a message from an agent saying that they'd see me at the World Championships and, you know, would you like to come to Kazakhstan? And at that point, I'd already like kind of agreed terms with Belfast. I agreed terms with Belfast for like 200 quid a week or something. And the conversation I had with my dad was like, do I go to Kazakhstan or Russia? I don't know anything, but it was a hell of a lot more money. It was good money. And I'm going to learn something new. And the style of play they play over there is a lot more wide open. And the regime over there is just absolutely wild. Like, it was like, what have I got to lose? I'm going to go over there. And you know what? If it works out, fantastic. If it doesn't, then you know what? I've always got the UK to fall back on. And I don't mean that in a bad term whatsoever. I mean, if you don't try it, then you don't know, right? So I accepted it. I was over there in Kazakhstan July 1st. And I tell you, it was unbelievable. I mean, I was the only person to speak English, except from Max Olov, who got drafted by Washington. And he lived in the next room next to me, like in the little hotel that we lived in. And it was a special experience. It was something that changed my life forever. It changed my hockey career forever. It changed my outlook on life forever. And despite what some people may say, it made me the person I am today. And some people like that, some people really don't, from what I'll read on Twitter. But yeah, I loved my time there. It was great. And it developed me as a hockey player. It made me see a different side of the game. It taught me a different side of the game. I mean, all we really see over here is the North American style. Now we're slowly getting a bit more European, but the Russian style was something fantastic. Like the Russian training, the old school Russian training. You know, I've been there July 1st, and for 6 weeks we wouldn't touch the ice, and it was wild, it was crazy, and a lot of stories to tell. And I love my time. I absolutely love my time in Kazakhstan. I hold my hands up and say, in school I wasn't the smartest person, but I taught myself Russian, and I loved it. And I would, again, I just love my time there, and it just brings a smile to my face of all the memories.
It was one of those areas where it was rumoured that a lot of British players may follow your lead and go to Kazakhstan. There was a lot of rumours around at the time. Do you feel that more British players should perhaps experience new horizons rather than maybe staying within the comfort zone of the Elite League?
Definitely, definitely. But what I can say is that comes within, like that, it comes within that person. Like at the end of the day, like you can't make anyone go away. Like I've read stuff. I read everything online. You know, I've got thick skin. I can take it. And when people say I come running home or this and that, like it's not just like that. I've moved away at 14 years old and I've been living away since I was 14 pretty much. And, you know, to spend a year in France, 4 years in Kazakhstan, back for a couple of years. And then obviously to Sweden for a little bit and then back, you don't get to see your friends, family. Things you miss as you get older, things change and your circumstances change. And but for when you're young, I think it's fantastic. Why not? You go and explore the world. you develop your game. I mean, there's been a number of players, I mean, that have gone away, and I don't think some of the time it's because of the missing home to come home. I just think maybe they're not good enough. And I think if you're good enough and you can stick it, then go, because you're far better in Europe than you are sitting on the bench at an elite league team. Sam Duggan, he's in Sweden with the junior 20s in the elite playing over there, and that's fantastic experience. Seeing the setup out there and how they work is unbelievable. Just getting away, and hockey is being your sole job at, you know, 17 years old, and just the ice time you get, you're playing against the best kids, and the training you get, the mentoring you get is top notch. And, you know, why wouldn't you do that? But at the same time, it's not for everyone, and it is difficult. But until that does happen, where we start getting players going away or the system changes in the UK, then we always are going to be the nation of just up and down and floating around, and it won't change.
Kazakhstan came calling again in 2018 when you had an opportunity of going to the KHL, and unfortunately that was taken away from you very shortly afterwards. So what happened there?
Yeah, just had a cup of tea and then came home. Didn't even get there, Jono. And it was kind of, you know, the high of getting promoted with GB is also the high that took me down almost, because so obviously with my time in Kazakhstan, and I played in the Kazakh league when I was there previous, and I did very well when I was there. I've set records of the best plus minus, most points for a D-man and whatnot. We had very good teams and we played well and made a lot of friends. And when we were in Hungary and we played the World Championships in Budapest a couple of years ago, obviously speaking to some friends on the Kazakh team and management that I knew, and they said, would you come back to Kazakhstan? And I said, of course, I loved my time there. I didn't want to leave. But again, things happen and you come home. And after the World Championships, we obviously get promoted. Kazakhstan don't go up. I get contacted by an agent. I had a good tournament. I got the best defenseman in the tournament, which is, you know, it was a real honor for myself, because some of those D-men were fantastic. They play in the best leagues in Europe. And to get that honor was something special. And so I obviously signed the contract with Barry's Astana in the KHL, which I was really excited about. And the problem is with the Kazakh national team, their head coaches, GMs, were also the head coaches and GMs of Barry's Astana. That was like their national team hub, which was in Astana, the capital. And because they didn't get promoted and went up, all their coaches, GMs, everyone got fired. And obviously my contract, the new coach, the new GM, didn't want to honor my contract. Again, it was just unfortunate. It's a shame, because I really wanted to go and prove that, you know, not only I could play at that level, but also that British players can play at that level. I know that when I signed my contract, they also had were looking at Jono Phillips, and they also had video on him. And when I spoke to Jono, I said, Jono, they actually want to see your video. Can you put him a video? He goes, I don't have a video. I'm like 36 years old. I'm not going anywhere. I don't have a video. I'm like, Jono, it's the KHL. You know, obviously it's good money. They want you. And they're like, all right. So he puts a video together, this and that. And then that happens with me. And he just laughs and said, yeah, I don't think they would have liked old John Boy in Kazakhstan. So, but again, it's just, you know, I think, for us to, as a national team, to get to where we have, like, there's got to be leagues and teams out there that want to take a punt on players. You know, there's rumors of Ben Bounds going elsewhere, and obviously Liam Kirk's doing so well. You know, it was like when France first went up and they got promoted, all their players scattered all over Europe to the top leagues, and they developed and their young players developed, and that's how they've stayed up in the top flight for 12 years. And I think that's really what GB could really do with, is, you know, the young players scattering around the top leagues in Europe to really develop and really hone that national team as well, just like France did.
So you wasn't out of a job long after Kazakhstan. You went to Sweden to play for Leksands in the Allsvenskan, but was only there for 11 games. So what was the story there? Because you ended up coming back to Sheffield partway through the season. So what did happen in Sweden?
Yeah, it was good. I mean, I love my time in Leksand. The people there were fantastic. I mean, Swedish hockey is just something, it is surreal. And it is just like football in this country. It's unbelievable. And I was there for 11 games and I didn't, you know, I was working hard. I was doing everything I needed to do and just wasn't getting a fair shake. And you know, I was speaking to the coach saying what I can do to get more and what can I do to work harder and what can I do to get to be playing a little bit more. And just, you know, sitting on the bench for a lot of time was difficult. And the reason why I went there is because obviously we were going into the top flight of the World Championships. I wanted to make sure that I was ready and up to that pace. And it was difficult, you know. And obviously the coach, the environment within the club was not great. The coach was very different, to say the least. And it's tough because literally a month after I left, the coach got fired. And if I knew that was coming, I wouldn't have left. But and then, you know, thankfully for Lexan, they got promoted to the SHL, which is fantastic because it's such a great town, such great people. And they are just salt of the earth people that I met there. And that I can't thank them enough for what they did for me and my family. And the people in the town are just fantastic. And in hindsight, I wish I just stuck it out maybe a bit longer. But, you know, I was worried about my hockey career, thinking if it was to go on like that, then I'd be struggling for the national team. And I didn't want that to take place. And I wanted to play. I need to play to obviously progress in my career. And so that's why I came home. And thankfully, Lexan did what they did and they went up. And I'm so happy for all the boys and everyone involved with that club.
We're going to talk about GB now, but I want to first go back to Division 1B in the Netherlands. A game against South Korea, it's 2-2, and you get a penalty shot. And
I didn't get the penalty shot. Russell Cowley got the penalty. He called the penalty. He actually got a partial breakaway and to hold him down. And I was on the ice, and I went over to Pete Russell with like the puppy dog eyes. I'm like, I want it. So that was, yeah.
Well, you pull off the most audacious move by putting the puck between your legs and flicking it top shelf. And it went viral. It was on NHL. It went all over North America. Everyone going, wow, look at this. To do that to all in a massive game in the context of that tournament, do you have balls of titanium?
I'm more, you know, a little bit stupid more than Adam, but no, it was a move that I always speak to goalies in practice and like, what's hard for you? What do you find difficult? When I was in Kazakhstan, I always mess around and doing stupid stuff or, you know, and one of the goalies said, hey, try this because it, you know, you've got to hold the puck out and you move it so quick. It's a lot of movement for them to chase. And it was something that I always used to do in practice and it worked a lot of the time. And I just thought, you know, a goalie's not going to expect it. They've got to honor the puck, and hopefully it went in or else I would have looked like an idiot. But, you know, it went in, and you know, everyone knows how it ends with us obviously not beating Lithuania and we don't go up. But, yeah, for that goal, it was pretty cool. And I wasn't even on social media at the time, so I had all these people telling me how viral it went, and I wasn't even on any social media back then. So, yeah, it was pretty interesting, though, pretty cool.
Obviously, the growth of the national team over those past five seasons, Pete Russell coming in, you go to the tournament in Belfast, still in Division 1B, win that by winning every game. That must have been special, especially being on home ice.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, it goes back further than Pete. I mean, you know, I think Pete will even admit it. It started with Tomo, Paul Thompson, you know, the foundations that he put in with the national team, with the manners that he put in and installed in, you know, Jonah Phillips and the older guys of David Clark and the older guys of Lobby and, you know, guys that have passed down the helm and, you know, Tomo working so hard and for the national team and what was installed when I first started with the national team. Rob Wilson, you know, obviously Corey being a player and then a coach. And it just goes back from not just from Pete, but it's been passed on from helm to helm. And like we're just talking about the Eindhoven tournament, the failure of that, and then going to Ukraine, failure of that. It was, you know, it's tough, it's difficult. And I think that just all built us up, that back-to-back failure of Ukraine and Eindhoven, and then going into Belfast, it was like, right, this is our time. And I think if you watch the highlights back of those games, we dominated that whole tournament. Like that final game against Japan was just dominance. They weren't even anywhere close.
Mm.
It was like we were set. We were just like a man on a mission. And every game we were just determined that this was our time. It's in our country. We get the evening games. We're rested. We get our food. We get everything. And we just, no one could touch us. And it was 2 years of frustration and failure that had been built into that tournament. And it was great to do it in front of our fans and the support we got. And then obviously going up to Holland, Budapest was something special.
I mean, that Budapest tournament, you went in as the lowest seeds of that tournament and yeah. End up winning the gold medal. Was there any expectation that you could do that amongst the squad? Or was it a surprise? Or was it as the tournament went on and the results kept going your way? Did you think, hang on a minute, we've got a chance here?
Well, we used to joke and say, like, we're either going to win it or we're going to get absolutely hammered. Because that's the way GB is. Like, we don't do things half-arsed. Yeah, so we don't do things by halves. Like, you know, you either we go all out or we either flop big time. So it's... me and Jono talked about it a lot prior to the tournament. We laughed about it after, and we still do to this day. Like, you know, we go in and we're playing Slovenia, the first game, who like the year before, year and a half before, was playing in the Olympics. And we just think, well, it's either going to go really good or really bad. And I think the realization of like where we were and the teams we were playing against was pretty big. And I think if you ask anyone on the team if they thought we were going to get promoted, I think, you know, they'd be lying to you. I think we were hoping just to stay up. I think that was our expectation, just to stay up would have been fantastic. You know, because everyone beats everybody at those in those groups. You know, they're all good teams. Whereas in the group before, you have to win every game to pretty much go up. Whereas in the other group, I mean, look at Italy. You know, they came up with us because we won in overtime. So it's wild, you know. And then again, they stay up in the top group in a shootout. So it's crazy how things happen. And, you know, that first game against Slovenia, it was just an absolute whirlwind and the emotions. And I think that just set us off on a good foot and the belief that we can do it and we can play with these players and we are good enough. And then we got brought back down to earth when we played against Kazakhstan.
the results were positive for the rest of the tournament, but 2-0 down against Hungary. I think there's 12 minutes left, and then Rob Dowd scores. Then they have a penalty shot that Ben Bounds saves, and then Robert Farmer pops up with seconds to go. And the joy on the bench is there for all to see for anyone who's seen that footage. But what I found quite hilarious about that was the fact that you still had overtime to play, and everyone starts celebrating. I just thought that was brilliant.
But again, like I'll reiterate, like I think at 2-0 down, that belief and the failure that we had at Ukraine and we had at Eindhoven, it was like it was that never say die attitude. Like, you know what? Like we're not giving up. We've come too far almost. And the belief, even with 2-0 down, and I'm not gonna lie, when they scored that second goal and it was 2-0 and the arena was jumping, like literally the arena was shaking because they were singing there like tune, and GB was stuck up in the rafters, their supporters, our supporters club, and it was a special experience. It was really cool to see. It was, and if anyone was in the building at that time, they'll agree, like they definitely know how to celebrate. And then when we brought it back to 2-1 with Dowdy, which was unbelievable, and then of course Farms does his thing, and now he's known for, you know, the Hungary and the France goal. You know, it was four, is it 14 point whatever it was left. And then, you know, after that, they called an icing when it shouldn't have been an icing. And there was the drama within the last couple of seconds. And honestly, it was just absolutely amazing. It was that was right up there with the France game. And, you know, to beat Hungary in Hungary in the last game, it was amazing. And anyone who was in that building that night will replicate that and tell you that that feeling was just outstanding. And again, like you said, you know, to have to still play overtime when you're exhausted, you're over the moon. You're ecstatic. You just don't know what to think. You just like, just end. Like, yes, you want to win, but you don't care if you lose or not, because we still got gold. We still, you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to carry on playing. And yeah, it was amazing. Then we go in the shootout, and Farm scored, I scored. It was unbelievable. And we win. So we had a great record in the tournament, and it was so fun. It was and even more fun to celebrate with the team after, and it was a great night.
Of course, that gets you to the top table and the World Championships. How incredible was that? Did you find yourself having to pinch yourself at times with some of the teams you was playing, some of the players you was playing against, the likes of Canada, the likes of the USA? Despite the results leading up to that France game, it must have been great.
Well, just a side note, Jono, like, growing up, my dad used to tell me stories about how he played against Team Canada, and he played against the best, and they played in Pool A. And as a kid, I'd not really known what it meant. But seeing my dad, you know, telling the stories about how he played against Team Canada, like, it's amazing. That's cool. And then when I came part of the national team system, and, you know, realizing how hard it is to get to that top flight, and realizing what an accomplishment it was, to it is something special. And that's, as I got older, you know, that's, well, Ben, you didn't play in Pool A. You know, that was the only real thing that he had over me, that I've never played in Pool A. And something that he always used to jibe me about was like, oh, well, you've never played in Pool A against the big boys, you know, and all this. So he always used to have a little dig now and again. And so to get there, and it was special, and he was proud, and, you know, I was proud to play, just like all the team was, to play against players you see on TV and your idols every day. And just to go back to what you're saying, the results didn't go our way. The first game was fantastic against Germany, and personally, on a personal level, I found it really difficult, because no matter how well we play, realistically, let's be honest, it'd take a miracle for us to beat Team Canada or Team USA. And realistically, like, they weren't even out of third gear. And it is, and that, for someone very competitive, that's a hard pill to swallow. And it is tough. And for me, I went through a whole host of emotions in that tournament, and highs and lows and very lows. And, you know, to come back in that France game the way that the team did, and it was unbelievable. And just myself to chip in and help the team as much as I could was something special. It was an amazing game. And the amount of times that I've seen those highlights of Ben Davis finishing that great feed off Jono is unbelievable. It's something that will live on for a long time, and, you know, that keeps us in the top flight.
I think it's fair to say you was taking a bit of criticism in that tournament prior to that France game. And then you come into the France game and you have an incredible game, and you set up the recovery at 3-0. That must have been very pleasing, after taking criticism, then to come out with a performance like that, that is a huge part of us staying in that World Championship group.
Yeah, big time, because if anyone, I mean, you know me, Jono, like, anyone who knows me, like, I wear my heart on my sleeve, and I'm an emotional player, and I'm, you know, and that's just the type of person I am, and whoever I'm playing for, I want to give my all. And, you know, sometimes that people criticize that I make mistakes, or I cost and I turn over, I do this, I do that. And yeah, I'm well aware of that. But at the same time, it's not for lack of trying. And if I was a perfect D-man, I wouldn't be playing in the British Elite League. I'd be playing in the NHL. We'll remember our place in our lives, right? So, and again, just to reiterate, like, that tournament, like I said, I found it very difficult to lose every game by so much, and wanting to win by so, you know, want to win so much. And I think you try too hard sometimes. And I think that's maybe something I did, is I was trying too hard to impress when it wasn't needed. And that last game was a do or die. And I owed it to my teammates. I owed it to my coaches. I needed to step up. And I felt at 3-0 down, I wanted to be the player. And I remember Pete saying in between the periods, like, who's going to be that player who's going to step up? Who's going to carry us? And I'm not saying I did that, because it was a team effort. But I remember sitting in the store thinking, I've shit the bed, excuse my language again, for, you know, six games. This is the time to make amends. And, you know, this is the time that I can really step up and get people going. And that pinch that I made, the guy, I saw him look over his shoulder and I knew what he was trying to do. And if that puck went by me, it would have been 4-0 maybe, and it would have been game over. But it's 3-0. You've got to take those chances. And I go on to get 3 assists in the game, and you know, we win 4-3. And that was my I'm sorry for 6 games, and I owed it back to Pete. And we had a good conversation in the huddle after the game, and they had a lot of belief, Corey, Kiefer, Pete, to pick me up and to get me ready for that game, because I was in a low point. And I'm hold my hands up and say that, because when you read what people say online, of course, whatever you say, I'm taking it 100 times worse, because I'm letting my teammates down. I'm the one in the dressing room who has to look at these people in the eye, and you're not doing your job. So it's difficult. So when you bounce back and you can do what I know I can do and get 3 assists, we win the game, we stay up. It's just like, man, I said to every single one of those players, I apologize for my performance for those 6 games. And they're all supportive, and they say, just laugh and say, don't be silly. Yeah, it was an unbelievable experience. And it's something that going forward mentally, myself personally, is definitely going to change maybe in the next World Championships, and how I approach it will be different, because it is a learning curve, and to play at that level is something that you can't ever comprehend.
Let's look ahead to the future now, because as we started the conversation, you've obviously left Sheffield. You haven't got a club at the minute, despite the online rumours.
Apparently, I've signed here, I've signed there. I'm definitely going here.
I've got you definitely at Guildford, certainly at Fife, and certainly at Nottingham. So how are you going to split your time between 3 clubs if the season starts? it'd be
honestly
interesting.
It's we're sitting here, Jono, on Friday evening, the 3rd of July, and I can hand on heart say that I have not signed with anyone, because 95% of the teams in the league are taking the standpoint of they're waiting to see what the rules are, what's going to happen, when the league's going to start, what's the rule change is going to be, what's going to happen, if the league's going to go ahead. So that's what 95% of the teams are saying. So I haven't had serious conversations with any of the teams, because they're all saying the same thing, which is totally understandable. So I have no idea where I'm going, but if you listen to people online, then I'm definitely going to Guildford. Yeah, I mean, I do go to Guildford quite frequently, because one of my best friends lives there, Stuart Potts. His dad's my godfather, and Andrew Hemmings, close friends, Digger, who's the coach there, I've known for years. We go golfing all the time, but it doesn't mean that I'm going to go and play for him. if that was the case, then I would have been signed in Nottingham years ago, because I golf with Lax and Ollie all the time. But when you play for the national team and you've got friends up and down the country and you like to golf, then you go golfing all over. So again, like, it is what it is. And I'm sure whoever teams that I've been linked with, that their coaches have got their idea of where they want to take their team. And I don't know if I fit into that, and I have to wait and see what the rule changes are and what happens and go from there, because hand on heart, I don't know what's going on with the league and when it's going to start, and other people don't either. So until that comes out and we get a definite answer, then, you know, I'm not going to be making a decision.
How much does your family come into this consideration? Because obviously you're married, you've got a young daughter, you live near Chesterfield. So yeah, that's probably where the Nottingham rumours are coming from, because you wouldn't have to move from home. But how much is your family a consideration? Because presumably wherever you move to, Nottingham accepted, you're going to have to move house.
Yeah, definitely. But at the same time, you know, my wife is very understandable, and, you know, she's very supportive of that my career doesn't last forever. And wherever I need to go, that she's backed me 100%. She's a key worker. She's an NHS worker. And within her role in the NHS, she is very flexible that she could move throughout the country. And that has been a conversation that we have had. And I am 31. Hockey doesn't last forever. And she understood when we got married and we got together that this isn't something that's going to last forever, but she will support me while I'm playing, as long as we're together as a family. And I'm not going off on my own. I want to be with my family. I want to be with my wife. I want to be with my daughter. And, you know, we want to have more children to come. So as long as we're together as a family, we'll go wherever it may be, and whatever's best for our family and whatever is the best fit for us. So if that's Nottingham, fantastic. If that's Fife, Belfast, wherever it may be, I have literally no idea, then fantastic. But like you said, Jono, just like everyone who's maybe listening, that you've got to do what's best for you and your family. And the conversations will be had not just down to myself anymore. It's what's best for my daughter. It's what's best for my wife also.
Like you say, you're just 31. I suppose retirement isn't really a consideration at this stage.
No, unless you think I should. What do you think?
No, I'm asking you the question. Personally, no. I don't think so. But I think you've got a few years left in you yet, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think the way I play, and I think I can still bring definitely a positive to a team. Not only on the ice, but off the ice as well. You know, that's my belief. I believe if a coach believes in me, then I'll reward them with the coach and the team hard work and a good attitude every day. And a happy attitude. I believe I'm a happy-go-lucky person and I want to win. And I've won a lot in the past and I want to take that wherever I'm going, wherever it may be, to win. And, you know, I'm very competitive, and for wherever I do go, that I hope that may continue.
The reason I asked that question, and the reason why this interview has come about, is we've got to know each other over the past couple of months. You have your own business as a financial consultant, and that's how we got chatting. Is that a consideration? Because obviously you do quite well with that. You've got a few clients. You do that with a few other hockey players around the country. So how is that? Is that a consideration for you as well, that maybe you're looking to life beyond hockey and making a career in that sort of environment?
I mean, regarding the hockey side, I'm training every single day. I mean, I'm doing miles and miles and countless of miles on the bike because gyms are closed. I'm in good shape. I feel great. I feel strong. Regarding the financial side, Game Plan Financial, it's something that this opportunity got brought to me by Paul Sample, who used to play, and he wanted to give an opportunity to players that when they retire, what you're going to do, because hand on heart, I didn't know what I would do after hockey. And yeah, he came to us with this opportunity, and we've been going at it for about a year and a half now, and passed all my exams, and just over the moon. I love it. And I mean, you've been through the process with me, and I think it's safe to say that you were happy, you and Helen, and you know, that we looked after you very well. And
yeah, definitely.
It's just given another string to my bow that it works alongside hockey very well, because, you know, we finish practice at 1 o'clock. So, you know, I can get meetings in with clients in the afternoon. I can go and see clients in the afternoon. It's a very low demand job. It doesn't take a lot out of your body. Going to meet people. I love speaking to people. I love helping people. I love saving people money. You know, I love chatting to new people, chatting about new experiences and what they've been through and how I can help them. And it's just, it's great to get out there and see other people. And like you touched on, I've got quite a lot of clients that are Steelers fans that I've reached out to after the fact, and, you know, that have laughed about it and said, you know what, you're going to forget about me now and this and that. But it's something that I do look towards after hockey, because despite what some fans may think, that we don't make football money and that, well, we don't get, you know, this type of thing. So we've got to look after our futures and our families and our kids, and you know, we've got to pay bills. And it's something that with our contacts and our respectability within our communities, that you're safe, that we are going to look after the individuals that we're dealing with. And that's where Game Plan Financial, that's where our MO is that you're dealing with someone that is respectable and trustworthy. And I've had a blast with it so far. I've met so many different people from different walks of life, and I look forward to meeting many more, and wherever I may go, and that may continue. But as far as I'm concerned about the hockey, I don't see that interrupting any time. My main job is a hockey player. That's my main concern. I want to represent the national team if that's something that I'm selected for. I want to play for many more years, and until that I'm not wanted anymore. No, I love my hockey. I'm my training. I'm good shape and I'm ready. My financial side of things regarding the business, It's just something that I want to make sure my transition for when I finish hockey, that it's seamless, that I'm not at a loose end or I go out on a crazy tangent or something like that, that so other many sports people do. So I think it's just me being maybe mature and grown up to have something in the future, because you never know when an injury may strike or something may happen that doesn't allow me to play hockey anymore. And what would I do? And, you know, there's only so many GoFundMe pages that can happen to help whatever it may be, or, you know, if something was to happen like that. But you want to make sure that you've got a, as a father and a husband, you want to make sure that you look after your family in the right and appropriate way.
Ben, I think that's a great place to leave it. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for being so open and honest, and thanks for being a guest on In Conversation With.
No, John, no problem at all. And again, I appreciate you having me on, and love what you're doing, and just keep up the good work.
Cheers, mate. Thanks a lot.